Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Search goes on in San Francisco for the man known as the Zodiac Killer.
In New York, the search continues for the .44 caliber killer.
See if you can explain to me why I would want to be a Scientologist.
Betches Media presents...
Tell me we have a lead.
Stone Cold, no.
It was literally like the Hunger Games.
Not another true crime podcast.
What can I say? Tough titties.
It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt.
Hey guys, welcome back to Not Another True Crime Podcast. Thank you so much for listening and reviewing and rating and subscribing. I had to switch up the order there. You know, you get tired of rate, review, subscribe. To everyone who participated in our contest, thank you so much. We loved all the positive reviews and we would love to do one again soon.
Yes, we definitely want to do one again soon. And in the meantime, if you still just feel the urge to follow us and like and review us, go ahead. I don't want to hold you back.
Right. Make dummy accounts. Just keep giving us those 5 stars.
Yeah,
that's
rig this election of rating, getting us a 5 stars.
Can you be our Russia? Be our Russia.
Da, 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 da. I don't know.
That was great. Was that Russian or you just made that up?
That was
Danny. Russian circus.
Why not? I mean, sure, I believed it. As always, Sarah Levine here with Danny Murphy.
Danny Murphy. And if you want to just follow us right now, I'm at Cashmere Danny, Cashmere with a K.
Mm-hmm. I'm Sarah F. Carter, BT Dubs.
And I'm Casey Balsham at CaseFaceB. Come on over.
Yeah. And also follow the podcast on Insta at NATCpod. We also have a fun Facebook group, not another true crime group. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of roast people's serial killer habits and like talk about theories.
It's so fun. It's the only reason I go on Facebook now.
Yeah. It's all about the secret Facebook groups these days. That's really what I live for. All right. Anyway, so we're going to play a fun game. So you guys liked this a lot. We played What Would Your Last Meal on Death Row Be?
Uh-huh.
We have since learned from information that we're going to talk about in today's episode that we were all really wildly unrealistic.
We were like, they will get us anything we want.
They're flying everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. It's like, oh, we're already costing the state millions in appeals. They're surely going to buy me Kobe
a lobster.
Beef.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, apparently you only get $20, at least in the state of Florida.
Yes.
For your last meal. That's kind of bleak. So with that being said, what would everybody's last up to $20 meal be?
I would do, and it's my favorite, and I don't know why I'm going out on like a health note, but I guess it's just the lifestyle, like the, you know, my goop in me. I would get, have you guys had the spicy Thai sabzi salad from Sweetgreen?
Absolutely not.
No.
The spicy Thai sabzi? You know what?
What's
I just say
sabzi?
Words up then and they hand me something and the dressing, it's like a spicy cashew peanut dressing that I would pour in my pores. It's so I would kill for it and I also would have it for killing someone. I would get that and that runs at about $12.95. Yeah, it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would want to top it off with like, because now I'm at a budget, like, a glass of Pinot Noir, and I know we're at a dollar crunch. Like, I'll take a happy hour one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'd have to be killed between the hours of 5 and 7.
Yeah, pretty much.
Monday through Friday.
I hope that works for Florida. Yeah.
Monday through Thursday sometimes. You might have to check in advance.
Or you know what? Maybe if it's a game night or a reverse happy hour, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m., we can make it work.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, we'll find a bar.
We can work with those.
But, that sounds scrumptious.
What do you think, Sarah?
I still think I can get 2 quality sushi rolls for $20. Maybe one is like a salmon avocado, nothing too fancy.
Yeah.
Then for the other one, I'll spring for something cool. Like, I don't know, a rainbow roll.
A cool rainbow roll?
Yeah.
A cool rainbow
roll. That's my plan.
I just also could imagine someone eating so slowly one sushi roll at a time when everyone's like, can we just kill this
bitch?
Imagine.
I'm like dipping the wasabi and mixing it in the soy sauce and they're like, hurry it up.
Yeah. Imagine asking for chopsticks on death row. Like, I'm sorry, is this a fork? What the fuck is wrong with you?
You hear on the window just like, can I have a little more soy sauce?
Yeah. Do you have a low sodium one? Which I'm convinced is not actually low sodium.
Not at all.
I think they were like, make a green
it's
lemon.
Water
just call it
it's
better.
Salt water. Yeah.
It's water salt. It's seawater, actually. You guys, you know, if I can't have what I want, I'm gonna do my trashiest treat, which is I get the 2 plain cheeseburgers at McDonald's. They taste the same no matter where you are, every freaking country. 2 plain cheeseburgers. I don't even know if I'd get the fries. I might go 2 plain cheeseburgers, which you know, if we're being honest, $2.
You got 18 bucks.
I know. You got a lot.
And they do not fill you up. Every time I get two plain cheeseburgers, I'm like, am I allowed to get more cheeseburgers? Yeah. They're tiny. And then I might go Crunchwrap Supreme from T-Bell.
You're still at $3.50.
Yeah. Casey, but dream big.
She's doing the rest of charity,
I guess. I'm still doing a bottle of wine.
Okay.
So I'm going to two plain cheeseburgers, a little Crunchwrap Supreme with a little fire sauce. And then I still think I'm going to take a bottle of red. To the head.
Just like bash yourself in the head with the wine, and you did it for them.
Yeah, exactly. And then they have to clean it.
Laugh.
Like, you wanted this thing to be messy.
They'll clean that, and then after you have all that junk food in your body, they'll be cleaning a lot.
Yeah absolutely. Absolutely.
You'll get the last laugh on your murder.
So that's me. Just a simple girl. A simple death row inmate that just wants cheeseburgers and Crunchwraps. That's it.
Oh my
Happy
God.
Happy Friday.
Happy Sorry, Friday, but it's Monday when
it's
you guys
Monday
are listening.
Monday for you guys. If we're losing our mind, it's because it's TGIF. It's Sarah's first Friday back in the office after Summer Friday. So
I'm beside myself.
Shout out to anybody that had to go through that this past week. Or last week.
Hot Girl Summer's over. We're done. Yeah.
Look, Hot Girl Summer's a state of mind. Okay. And we're going to seamlessly transition into Thawtum now.
Thawtum.
It's happening.
Thawtum.
I wish I thought of that. I didn't.
You wish you thought of that.
I tried to make it Fuck Girl Fall, and then people were commenting Thawtum, and I was like, fuck, that's good.
Thawtum is also good.
Thawtum is
It's Thawtum.
Perfect.
Yeah. Begrudgingly.
And I feel like who we're talking about today is the definition of
Oh my
Thawtum.
God. Your
girlfriend.
Not entirely wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not.
We're going to be talking about Eileen Wuornos, supposedly the first female serial killer. Mm-hmm. We're going to unpack that. I don't feel like that's 100% accurate.
Yeah.
We have a lot to talk about with her. She's a very fascinating woman. Let's start with just some of the basic facts. Eileen, she was born on February 29th, which I think already makes you a little bit of a weirdo when you don't get a birthday every year. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Like, not only, well, you'll hear about her tragic backstory, but then also, like, she's born on a day that only comes every so often. Like, of course you would feel, like, left out. And, like, you did, like, how I said every so often, because I actually didn't know. I'm not a scientist.
A scientist.
I'm not a scientist. I don't know about leap years. So she was born February 29th, 1956 in Michigan. And obviously you know her by her street. By her street cred, which is killing seven men between 1989 and 1990. She went crazy for that year.
Rough year.
Well, maybe not, though. Well, I mean, apparently when we get to know her,
it was
a good year for her. And the way that she would kill these men is she would just shoot them at point blank. So there was nothing fancy, nothing crazy about her killing. She just shot them. Mm-hmm. And she's widely thought to be the first female serial killer.
But I feel like that's not the first... A real complete picture. I was listening to last podcast on the left. They kind of went into it. Essentially, she's the first. She's not the first female serial killer in the sense that, like, she's not the first woman to kill a bunch of people.
Yeah.
But she's the first woman who was kind of like more like a male serial killer.
Right.
And that she was just kind of doing it for personal gratification and not like she was killing her husband and then this guy and she was just kind of hunting these men or sort of.
So she broke a glass ceiling. That's
I know, right? Oh my gosh, thank you, Eileen.
We do deserve
your
equal pay. We do deserve equal pay. Look, we have the same motivation, which is nothing to kill people. But that's crazy. That is interesting. She it wasn't for. I mean, you know, she flip flops in the reasons of why she does kill this man. These men, which we'll get into. But that's really interesting that it's
like
not
a
personal.
Right, she's like. Can you guys imagine? It didn't take us until 1990
to have a woman to kill
multiple people. No.
Because there's a lot of reasons. All right, so jumping into the beginning of her life and kind of just, it's a very hard, reading the early parts of her life does get kind of like hard and sad because she has a rough go of it.
Literally, I texted you guys, I was three sentences into the Wikipedia and I was like, what the hell, man? Like, much happens
so early.
Is
this a Lifetime original movie? It's rough, yeah.
Yeah.
So her mother, Diane, was 14 years old when she married her
14.
Father, who was 16.
That's like barely a period.
Yeah, that's...
That's like you're not really fully...
Yeah, that's an ellipses. Yeah. Yeah. So,
an ellipses.
So they were married in 54, and then she had an older brother, Keith, who was born a year after. And then so under less than 2 years after their marriage, before Eileen was born, her mom filed for divorce. So she kind of came into this relationship that wasn't even there anymore. And then she never met her father, Leo, because he was incarcerated before she was born. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia and was convicted of sex crimes against children.
Oh, boy. Yeah. He kidnapped and raped a kid.
So that is where half of her comes from that. So that's just hard. Yeah. So he also unfortunately wound up killing himself in prison on January 30th, 1969. So she never met him, was never remotely, he was never remotely in the picture.
She didn't really even know about him.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
And on top of that, her mom ran off in 1960, leaving Eileen and Keith with their maternal grandparents, Lori and Britta, who legally adopted them 4 years later. So they spent the main family figures that she had were these grandparents.
Yeah, that she didn't even really know were her grandparents. Yeah.
No, and the interesting about that is the same thing happened to Ted Bundy. So after we did our whole episode on the Zac Efron movie,
Shockingly Evil, the Shockingly Evil, Shockingly Evil movie.
Blah, blah,
yeah,
Vile, 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 Vile.
Yeah, that's
Nick Vile, Vile, Vile.
Yes. So we
Vial.
Yes, Vial. I know. He made sure to correct me on that one time I interviewed him about his essential oils company.
Okay, I need my last meal now.
What a fucking sentence.
Oh. I know. More on that on the Bachelor podcast. But after we did that episode, we got this really awesome email from a fan, Felicia Sullivan. Shouts out. She apparently, literally wrote the book on Ted Bundy. Like, she researched him a lot. And she was telling me that a huge part of his whole situation was that his mom had him when he was a teenager, mm-hmm. and then he got raised, I think, by his grandparents, but he didn't know. And until he didn't find out until high school that the person he thought was his sister was actually his mom.
Ah!
So.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I do remember
that
hearing about this.
Such a mind fuck. Like, yeah. Rocks, that's so insane.
So shouts out to Felicia. Thank you again for sending that. But
also, hi, Felicia.
It's weird because I didn't know that people did this until this one episode of Scandal with Lisa Kudrow. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, okay, no. Apparently, if this really happens to you, you're going to become a serial killer. You're not going to run for public office.
Yeah. Or you have two extremes.
Yeah. You're right. Two extremes.
Yeah. But how crazy. Yeah. They didn't find out till way later that the grandparents were her grandparents.
Yeah. Why? And also, why not just be upfront about that?
I mean, I guess it's
not that weird.
I mean, they were young when they went to live with them. So I guess at a certain point,
I mean, being, she was four.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Right?
But I mean, also then that would make the mom 18. You think the mom 18 knows the reasoning skills to be like, I should explain this to my 4-year old. I think the mom.
No, but the grandparents should.
Yeah. The grandparents should.
But clearly the grandparents were fucked up.
And so was the mom. Like, yeah.
Everybody in this situation is fucked up.
All right. Expectations are too high.
They are, Sarah.
All right. My bad. So at age 11, holy shit, mm-hmm. Eileen started to exchange sexual activity for cigarettes, food, and drugs, in addition to performing sexual acts with her brother. Mm-hmm. I mean, now, who was the brother older?
Yeah, he was
one year
older.
Yeah.
Okay, so I feel like that's less doing sexual acts and more like abuse.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also maybe experimenting, we don't know who knows what mm-hmm. the hell. Obviously they didn't have any strong figures telling them right from wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Eileen had said that her grandfather was an alcoholic who sexually abused her and mm-hmm. also had his friends abuse her as well. Unsurprisingly, she became pregnant at 14 by a friend associate of the grandfather. Yeah.
Which at that time though, she thought it was just her dad fucking her. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm saying she didn't know it was her grandpa. So she just grew up thinking that her mom let this abuse happen and then her dad just was doing this to her. Crazy, right?
God. Cool. I want to die.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
She gave birth at a home for unwed mothers on March 23rd, 1971 and gave the child up for adoption. Soon after, she dropped out of school and her grandmother died of liver failure. Then at 15, she was thrown out of the house by her grandfather. Fuck you, dude.
Yeah. Literally.
And basically left her to fend for herself by living in the woods and becoming a sex worker.
Yeah.
And even just from that, all of that happening to her before being 16.
Yeah, that's a heavy lot.
It's very, I feel like it'd be very hard for someone to come out of that with no support anywhere.
It would be hard for anyone to come out of that unscathed and normal. Yeah.
And it just sucks because it's it wasn't, things like this, when I see things like that, it's she didn't ask to be born, she didn't ask mm-hmm. to be born into this thing. It's just, it's insane kind of.
And also it's hard too, because it's when you, it's that unfortunate expectation that you assume an older person would at least be, okay, I need to take care of this child and kind of give them, mm-mm, maybe not the best, like the best life that you can give that person.
Yeah. It's really sad. But so on May 27th, 1974, by the time Eileen was 18, she was already getting arrested. She got arrested first in Jefferson County, Colorado, with a DUI. Yeah, I'd probably drink too. disorderly conduct and firing a gun from a moving vehicle.
Is that illegal?
That's Friday, bitch. But on top of that, she was also charged with failure to appear because, again, this woman has there's no construct of like, hey, right, you have to do these things of right and wrong.
Well, also, yeah. I mean, why would she like want to go to court?
No.
Who wants to?
Yeah.
Who has the time?
She's busy.
Who is stopping joyriding and shooting guns in the air to go to court? You know? Not Eileen, that's for sure. So in 1976, she hitchhiked all the way over to Florida, where she actually met a 69-year-old yacht club president named Louis Grotzfeld.
This is my favorite.
This is a really interesting part of the story.
This is my favorite part. It's like almost aspirational.
It's a true Cinderella story,
like rags to almost riches.
Rags to riches for like a split second.
It's an R-rated Annie.
100%. She went from being a prostitute living in the woods. She meets this yacht club president and they actually get married. So they get married very quickly. They get married. But this didn't actually stop Eileen from doing anything bad. She still would get into multiple altercations at local bars. She was just hitting people, throwing things. And she actually went to jail briefly for assault. And she actually, because her husband was older, she actually at one point hit him with his own cane. What did he do?
Mm-hmm.
But it would lead him to get a restraining order that he would take out on her just weeks after getting married. As it happens,
The honeymoon phase ends.
With the caning. But so soon after that, she actually went back to Michigan, and she was arrested on July 14th, 1976, for disturbing the peace for throwing a cue ball at a bartender's head. Oof. Girlfriend's got
She does a last call haul. Like when it's last call, she snaps. Yeah,
she wants that other Bud Light. And then 3 days later, after she got back, her brother actually died from esophageal cancer, and she received $10,000 from his life insurance, which is interesting that he had the wherewithal to put out a life insurance policy. Like, it just seems whole family's a little dick.
How much life insurance can you get when you don't have a job and you're a sex worker, like living in the woods? Like, what would she have done is what I mean.
Mm. Yeah.
I truly don't know how this works, but I mean, what income does she have to like report?
Yeah. But I also wonder what he was up to that would get him to have remotely
anything.
Yeah. But I mean, at least, and I guess that is his only family. I mean, it's just interesting that he even had her as a thing, you know, because it seems like clearly their relationship
and she wasn't
weird.
In the picture that much. And now at this point, it's also, she has no real living family.
The grandpa's maybe still living, but he's not in her life, out of the picture completely. Yeah, and he kicked her out, so he's obviously not in the picture.
I said out of the picture. Yeah, but not dead.
But you were saying no living, and she's clearly, and she's got a kid somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
and she still has a mom somewhere.
You're right.
Oh yeah, and the dad. Oh
no, the dad killed himself. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, too many people to keep track.
Yeah. This family tree is
It's weird shaped.
It's weird shaped. So after her marriage with Fel fell through, they annulled after 9 weeks, and she wound up spending all of the money from her brother's life insurance.
Get it, girl.
And this is kind of too.
No,
I was
this
like,
part annoys me.
But
of course, she's the first time she had money in her life. Of course, so she's gonna blow it.
She spent it like paying tickets off from getting DUIs and things like that, but also in lavish luxuries like a car that
a luxury car.
Yeah,
and she totaled it right away, and I was oh my god, you could have actually probably set yourself up for a decent amount of time.
But I mean, that's a hard thing where it's like, that's not how her brain
works. Yeah, she didn't have a financial advisor.
Yeah, she's not going to be like, oh, I'll get a little one bedroom and, take computer science courses.
I'm also wondering, as a homeless teenager, how she even got a license. Because she would have had, you know what I mean? She would have to have brought herself to a DMV, put a fucking license on an address on a license. Because I don't know. Well, maybe in the 70s, they were going to buy a car.
She obviously has ID because she keeps getting arrested.
Could you get
licensed
when you were younger there? Like when she was 15 or 16?
Oh, it's Florida. You can get a learner's permit.
No, it's Michigan. It's back in Michigan.
Back in Michigan now.
But yeah, I'd probably say.
But she could have gotten it in Florida.
What's the difference? Yeah. Just kidding, Michigan or Florida. So On May 20th, 1981, she was arrested in Florida for the armed robbery of a convenience store where she stole $35 and two packs of cigarettes.
Yeah, I get it.
So, I like when you're like, when you lose the 10 grand, but you still need a Marlboro.
When I was younger, same. I would have done the same. $35 and two packs of cigs. Coolest girl on the block.
Because you know, then you can get, you get
coolest
all,
girl at the roller.
All the plain hamburgers from McDonald's for days.
Plain cheeseburger, bitch. You give me my cheese.
Have that, some dignity.
That extra 10 cents.
Come on.
She was sentenced to prison for that on May 4th, 1982, but then released like a little over a year later in 83. And then a little bit right after that, was arrested again for attempting to pass forged checks
That's
at
like a
bank a
year
in
later.
Key West. Yeah, Almost to the year, yeah. So she was arrested in 82, released 83, and then 84. Yeah, for
she's truly a dumb criminal.
A dumb criminal.
She got caught for everything.
And it's also, I also feel like up until this point, I guess in the grand scheme of things, this is a criminal act that forged checks, but also she's kind of more so just kind of being
surviving.
Like a player and a survivor trying to trying to get by day to day for herself.
She's trying to hustle.
And then on November 30th, 1985, she was named as a suspect in the theft of a revolver and ammunition in Pasco County. So this is kind of like...
Every year something.
Literally every single year.
Every year.
She gets to trouble with the cops.
And I think it's kind of one of those things where she's just spiraling more and more, trying to be like, how can I survive? Like, it's kind of more so she's fighting for her life every day and making negative wrong choices, but also because what else in this moment can she do?
Right, you're in this cycle. How the fuck do you get out?
Yeah, she has no help. She has nothing.
Yeah, so she was arrested in Miami in 1986, January 4th, and charged with car theft, resisting arrest, and obstruction of justice. Very Countess Luann. because she obstructed the justice because she provided identification bearing her aunt's name. So that could be...
So she had an aunt.
All right. Where was this bitch at?
More family that is apparently just also leaving her kind of out to...
And in the stolen car, there was a 38 caliber revolver and a box of ammunition. So she's locked and loaded. So at this point, she's
literally
locked and loaded.
Cool.
She was detained for questioning a few months after that. And because a male companion accused her of pulling a gun in his car and demanding $200. Because throughout all of this, too, she is kind of still turning tricks and doing prostitution to get money from guys. But then
sex work.
And she said she actually didn't charge a lot. So she was pretty popular.
Like
she said, she was making sometimes on a slow day $150, sometimes $200 to $300. Yeah. So a day.
Not
bad.
While all of this is happening, and if you guys were familiar with this case or first familiar with this case from like the movie Monster with Charlize Theron, this is when the Christina Ricci character comes into play. So around this time, she met Tyra Moore, a hotel maid at a Daytona Beach gay bar. So they moved in together kind of soon after, and Aileen started supporting them with her earnings as a prostitute.
Yeah. Although apparently the character in Monster is a fictional character because I guess Tyra was super personal private.
Yes.
And so they tried to make it seem that she didn't have it was the same type of relationship, but they tried not to make any of the details personal. Because if you look at a picture of Christina.
Did she just not have the rights to her story?
It was kind of like,
I read that she was just too private or something.
I think it
like
was sort of the situation where you can't use someone's likeness. It happened with this is a little tangent, but like, The Rose, that movie that was supposed to be about Janis Joplin's life, her family was like, you can't do a movie starring Bette Midler about our daughter who died. So then they just were like, she's a troubled rock star who looked just like her. So I think it was more of a situation like that.
Oh, okay.
Then on July 4th, 1987, the Daytona Beach detained both of them at a bar for questioning regarding an incident in which they were accused of assault and battery with a beer bottle.
Go, girl.
So, you know.
She's constantly throwing shit.
Yeah. So, but then in 88, Ornos accused a bus driver for assault, and she claimed that he pushed her off the bus following a confrontation, and Moore was listed as a witness. So kind of like year in, year in, year, you see her. I feel like this part was important because every year you kind of saw her still.
It kind of elevates
it. So it's like she's like, okay, getting all these kind of big issues but minor kind of situations, a beer bottle, a cue stick type of stuff like that, and then
a cane.
And now it's the added element of she's now in love trying to support a woman that she loves while also doing sex work and getting more frustrated and with all the trauma she had from her past.
And she claims that Tyra was a booze hound. Supporting Tyra's beer drinking habit.
Yeah.
But Eileen has proven to kind of be a bit of a a liar and
yeah, unreliable and, like, narrator. Unreliable. For sure.
Yeah, she contradicts herself a bunch, but
yeah,
we know.
Should we talk about her and Tyra's relationship? Like, they were super close.
Yeah,
they were like
thick as thieves. These two,
thick as thieves, and it kind of was one of those like they were, like they kind of immediately connected. It was a very hot and heavy situation.
They went home like the night that they met. Yeah. I think according to Tyra, they met at a bar and they went home that night, which is interesting because obviously Eileen was married to a man and doing sex work and stuff like that. But, you know, maybe there's also a lot of all this stuff comes from pain of, like, you know, not being able to be who she was. Also that, like, on top of all the fucked up other shit. Mm. So who knows?
Because that's the thing. It's like on top of the trauma she had growing up.
Yeah.
The mental issues that she had, and then this life that she's living her, she's like, who am I? Like, that question.
Yeah, but also after all that stuff, I'd probably be like, I don't think I want to be with a man, you know. Even though she said she didn't hate men, she just hates male cops, male lawyers, male judges, stuff like that.
Relatable.
Well, and also it's
relatable. Absolutely
relatable. And also it's probably a thing where her experiences with them have probably been less than ideal. I mean, obviously she hasn't been abiding by the law to the up degree, but I'm sure I'm just assuming that a lot of cops that she was dealing with weren't that, like the most kind to her. Yeah.
But with Tyra too, she loved Tyra up until the day she went to, like, she still, if you watch these like interviews with her, whenever, even though Tyra, you know, which we'll get into eventually, goes against her, but when she talks about her, she's like, she smiles super big. Like, she's still, she was like, I loved her. Like that, like, and you see just the grill of all the funny teeth that that Eileen had. Like, she really, really.
Well, and I felt like too, it was kind of the first, even though she was married, like that relationship kind of seemed very rushed and not real. And maybe because it was like a rich, like kind of a more like convenient situation type of setup, but her and Tyra, I feel like I want to say they had like an actual connection and they were able to
it seemed that way.
Yeah. And
they also were leading like similar lifestyles.
Yeah. And I think it was probably the first time that Eileen was like, oh, someone cares about me and understands me, and not through like a transaction, just through like, I can go home and know that there's someone home for me.
Yeah. Although I do wonder, where was Tyra, like, because essentially they moved in pretty fast to like motels and stuff like that before I think they found a tiny apartment.
I think she was like along for the ride the whole time until it got to a point where she was like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't look into it, but I feel like it isn't like extremely common. But back then, I feel like people also did do like living in motels if they couldn't really afford apartment situations yet. So maybe that was something Tyra was doing until they kind of pulled together.
True.
True. Let's get into the murders, the reason we're all here. Okay, so after this 1988 arrest is when the murder spree begins, where she ends up killing 7 men in 12 months. Honestly, I respect the efficiency.
Yeah. And she started killing when she was 33, which, again, if you're in your 20s, you'll peak in your 30s. Yeah. Don't worry about it. The 30s is really
What's that thing? It's like, Tina Fey was working at a YMCA until 30. Eileen wasn't killing murders until 33.
All right, there we go. So there's still time for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, not for me.
Oh, sorry, Casey.
That's okay.
Sorry, but you know, you made it
choices.
Out.
I made it out.
You're not a serial killer.
I'm not a serial killer.
You passed the threshold. You did it. You're not a statistic.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Eileen's first murder was of Richard Malloy, who was a convicted rapist, who Eileen said she murdered in self-defense. Mm-hmm. On November 30th, 1989, he was shot with 2 bullets in his lung. Okay, we can talk about our opinions once we get through all the murders. The rest of her murders were carried out between then and November of 1990, so again, efficient. All the victims were found after being shot multiple times by a small caliber weapon, very close up. The only exception was Peter Sims. Mm-hmm. Cool, nailed it. Sims, who was never found, but whose body was never found, but Moore and Eileen were seen abandoning his car and had her fingerprints on it. So she like probably did this, even though there was never a body.
Yeah.
All right, so after Richard Malloy, there was David Spears, who's 43. He was a construction worker. And this is the weirdest one, too, because on June 1st, 1990, he was found along the road in Florida. He'd been shot 6 times, but he was naked. Ooh. Then we have Charles Carskadden, who was 40. On May 30th, 1990, he was killed. He'd been shot 9 times with a small caliber weapon. All right, then we have Peter Sims, who was 65. His car was found on July 4th, 1990. And Tyra and Eileen were seen abandoning the car And also Eileen's paw print was found on the interior like door handle.
Print, I think, yeah.
His body was never found, but like I said, there was evidence that pointed to the two of them. Then we have Troy Burris, who is 50. He was reported missing on July 31st, 1990. Okay. And then his body was found a couple days later on August 4th in a wooded area along a state road. And he'd been shot twice. Then we got Charles Dick Humphreys, age 56. I know. I did not make that up.
That Dick Humphreys.
Yep. He was found on September 12th, 1990. He was clothed this time, but he'd been shot six times in the head and torso. And finally, wrapping up, we have Walter Antonio, who is 62. He was found on November 19th, 1990. He was found, though, nearly naked. He'd been shot four times. So she has this interesting MO. Everybody shot. Sometimes they're naked. Undressed. Sometimes they're not. Also, all that info came from Wikipedia because somehow we lost the breakdown in our outline. Yeah. So we had to improvise real quick. So please don't accuse us of plagiarism. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, we're just trying our best.
We're just doing the best we can. Yeah. So, but I think the reason why half of them were naked, I think she still, I had read that she kind of, it was still a ploy. Like she was still, I mean, she would say hooking. With no G.
That's what she said.
Yeah, she was like, I was, you know, living in the woods, hooking. But she would act kind of like she was in distress, I think, and get these guys to pull over. I think also she got a lot of them from
sex working. Yeah,
from sex working. So I think there was, that's probably why there was a little.
Right, and there was both. She would kind of claim that they were like about to do stuff, and then they either started trying to rape her or like were assaulting her, and that's why she had to kill them in self-defense.
Because that's also the MO. All of the shots were very close up too, so they were at a. She wasn't like stalking prey.
Nobody
out.
They
was were very much
running
to her face.
They were in the car together. I mean, in the Richard Malloy thing, that's the one that she kind of. This is the kickoff one was the one that she like goes into detail about the. That he like raped her, that he sodomized her and did all this stuff and things like that. And so,
I mean, he is a convicted rapist.
Yeah. So that's
I would believe that.
Yeah. She would later go back and say that he didn't do that stuff, which is again, she had some questionable things and her story kind of changed, I think, as this story moved along and as she, you know, maybe kind of started to go crazier in jail. But yeah, she's even quoted as saying, I was watching this one thing. She doesn't believe that what she did to them was that terrible. Cause she was like, she's like, yeah, I just killed them. I shot them. I didn't do anything crazy like shoot them between the eyes or cut off their penises. She actually is quoted as saying, I didn't cut them up. I didn't do no OJ shit, which is like, it's like so wild when two of your
Portia reads the papers.
Culture murderers
I know.
Come and
when
reference
worlds
each other.
Denise, she was like, I didn't kill a man every day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The one somebody
well, yeah,
was like,
come on, there's not enough time in the day.
I watched an Australian 60 Minutes, which was, it's really quick if any of you guys want to watch it.
Is it 60 Minutes?
No, it was 14 minutes. So I'm like, what happened? How many commercials are there in Australia?
Yeah. I guess that's the metric system.
Yeah, I guess that's what you get with, you have meters of TV. No, I don't know. But the woman was just like, yeah, but you killed seven guys. Because after she was like, I didn't do anything crazy with them. She's like, but you killed seven. She goes, yeah, in a year. I wasn't killing someone every day. And you're like, that's a good point.
That's kind of like the same logic I use when people like talk about your like body count in terms of like how many people you've slept with. You're like, well, I only slept with seven people in a year.
Like
I did it in a month.
When if you look at the numbers, it's not a lot.
Right. Sometimes I just laid in bed watching TV.
Yeah. Especially since she was. But I also wonder, because if she was killing them for their things, for their money, because she is quoted as to saying a couple of them just died because they had the right amount of money on them at the time.
Well, then, that's why I never carry cash.
Then if there was only, there you go, girl. If there was only seven of them and she was taking like $200, like what else was she, I guess then it was just sex work for the rest of the time.
Probably.
Because she was doing the thing. She was killing them. She was using their cars. She was using their things. Like she was taking over their life for a little bit, you know?
I mean, I don't think she was impersonating them.
No, she wasn't doing that. But I mean, she was
just taking their shit.
Yeah.
She needed the stuff.
Yeah,
if you got a Camry and the guy's dead, someone has to drive the Camry.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
Why also like a lot of these guys' cars would get abandoned and found in like different counties, which I feel also why it took a little bit of time for the law to catch up with her.
Yeah, yeah.
She was not exactly like a criminal mastermind.
No, she was pretty dumb about it. Yeah. And Tyra says she remembers the day that that Eileen came home and like just kind of very matter-of-factly talked about the first killing. I think she said she sat her down and was just like, I have something to tell you. She's like, I shot and killed a man today, and that was about retrieving the life. And I think, because Tyra was there for all of them.
Yeah, usually right? Like when someone's I adopted a dog without telling you.
I was literally going to say that.
She said, I got us a puppy.
Yeah, when you hear them tell the story, she just goes, I shot and killed a man today. And it's just like, it's a very matter-of-fact thing. You know, and Eileen will say that it's again because she was supporting Tyra and they were behind on rent, mm-hmm. and so she just thought that this was the only option was to take the money, take the cars,
take the money and run,
take the money and run.
My favorite next quote.
Next.
All right. So on July 4th, 1990, Eileen and Tyra abandon Peter Sims' car after they get involved in an accident. Like idiots. Witnesses had seen the women driving the cars. Okay, so also I heard on a podcast that basically, like, they get in this crash, a bunch of people see, they beg all the witnesses not to call the police, and they're like, sure, we won't do that. So they run away, and then obviously they call the police because they're like, we just saw these two sketchy women, like, get in an accident.
They probably were a little frantic.
So all these witnesses ended up providing the police with their names and descriptions, and this resulted in a media campaign to locate them. And also, since Eileen was arrested in Florida before, her fingerprints were on file. So, on January 9th, 1991, Eileen was arrested, ironically, at a bar called The Last Resort.
At 11 a.m.
At 11 a.m.
At 11 a.m. Yeah. Wow. I guess what she would do is she would hustle people for quarters for the jukebox to listen to her favorite song.
Aww.
And on this day, it was like the cops were like, oh, I got a quarter for you. And then they arrested her.
Wow. Mm. I hope she got to play her song.
I know. Me too. Yeah. I hope she didn't have to like wait an hour for it to come up.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, she's like, wait, guys. She's like, I just want to hear it.
Yeah. And also, side note, if anyone wants to visit The Last Resort, there is a shrine to her there.
I mean, is there?
Literally on the walls. Yeah. Because it's not like a tourist destination.
People love her.
She,
there's like t-shirts with her mug.
People are sick.
Yeah. But like, she's not. People don't think that what she did was wrong. Like, people actually
That's
crazy.
Weird. I mean, people also don't really think what Ted Bundy did was wrong because they're like, he's hot.
I mean, we're all going to Gypsy Rose's wedding. Like, it's all
Yes. Police also located Tyra the next day in Scranton, Pennsylvania, which was like, whoa, she put miles on her.
She loved The Office.
She loved The Office. Tyra agreed to elicit a confession from Eileen in exchange for immunity. Smart lady. So she goes back with the police to Florida, where she gets put up in a motel under police guidance. She makes a bunch of calls to Eileen, basically pleads for help in clearing her name. 3 days later, on January 16th, 1991, Eileen confessed to the murders. She claimed the men had tried to rape her and she killed them in self-defense.
So, so then obviously after this, she goes to trial, mainly for the murder of Richard Malloy on January 14th, 1992. And on January 27th, she was convicted of the murder because Tyra... testimony and obviously everyone
just start talking about a speedy trial.
I know, right? What happened to the justices? I mean, like, because usually
I guess they were really working efficiently in January of 1992. I mean,
everyone wanted to go to the gym after the trial because the holiday wait. They're just like, you know, let's go to the. Meanwhile, Anna Delvey's 3 years long,
right?
A psychiatrist present though did testify that she was that like Eileen was clearly mentally unstable.
Yeah, they tried to claim that she had bipolar disorder, a bunch of...
They said she had everything,
I mean, she probably had PTSD.
From all the things. But it kind of, even with the gravity of all of her murder, she was sentenced to the death penalty 4 days later.
Again, so fast. Like, holy shit.
You never hear about this anymore. Usually it's like...
I know, where are these jurors at with, like, Stephen Avery and Adnan Syed? I need answers now.
Yeah, right?
Seriously.
I love it. And this was even before podcast. I mean, maybe this... Because this was before true crime podcasts were around. They're like, who cares? Let's just get this over with.
Yeah, you're
They worked on the newspaper system. They're daily.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Maybe that's why.
She confessed. So there was really nothing to fight.
I mean, yeah, no.
Yeah. And then... but then on top of this, so after she was... sentenced to the death penalty on March 31st, 1992. She pleaded no contest also to the murders of Humphrey, Burress, and Spear, saying she wanted to get right with God.
Pleading contest basically meant that she was taking a fast track to the electric chair.
Everyone was getting on the go.
Which people criticized her lawyer for, but he was just kind of like, you know, I think he was asked, he's like, did this case help you? And he's like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But like, I had to do, you know, she did this. I mean, what am I going to fucking do?
I also don't think her lawyer was like the most experienced criminal defense attorney ever.
Yeah, what did you say his name was?
Dr. Legal.
Dr. Legal. Doctor.
On his like TV.
On his commercials. Yeah.
Commercial things.
Yeah, there was no like Julian Margulies in The Good Wife.
Yeah, it was like Better Call Saul shit.
Yeah. But at the same time, I saw this, if you watch one little thing, as much as she was like confessing and ready to kind of like do all this shit, as the judge was sentencing her, she was still like screaming. She's like, I'm a raped woman. How could you do this? And she actually screamed at the judge, I hope your wife and kids get raped.
Yes.
So that you know, like she was like, so there was a lot. That's what I'm saying. Like, it was so weird because she was very much like, I fucking did this. Put me in the chair. I want to get right. But she was also like, you guys all failed me. Everybody failed me. I'm a woman. I was raped. I had all this shit happen to me. Like, you guys all let me down and now you're benefiting and making movies off of my fucking name.
I mean, I think both could be true at the same time.
Yeah.
Also, I heard that she sold her rights for $60 a day.
Yeah, she was like writing a book. She was doing something.
Yeah, but $60 a day? I'm like, that's literally nothing. I mean, I guess you could be bawling in the commissary, but but damn, like, have a better negotiator.
Juicy fruit for days. Yeah.
Yeah.
overall, she did receive the death sentence for 6 of the 7 murders, and the only one that she didn't receive for was Sims, because his body was never found.
Right.
Even though, ironically, it was his car that expedited all of this. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got to say, 6 death sentences seems like literal overkill.
Yeah. No, seriously.
That's what I didn't get.
Like, what's even the point at that point?
Why even try for all? Like, it's like she's already getting
it, it
the death
sentence. Like, isn't that just wasting everyone's time? Like, the trial's time? Like,
time and
like
money.
Bringing in the dancing lobsters. I guess like, what is happening
the
here?
The good thing is, I guess the family gets justice, but what's the point of sentencing someone who's already sentenced to death again?
Yeah. I wonder if that's a good point. Yeah.
Putting her in the electric chair like 6 times. They just hit it 6 times.
They weakened at Bernie's. That's morbid.
That's
like, they are like, can you imagine like the case, like she just walked into the court and the judge is like, Aileen, again. Okay.
You know why. Back to the chair you go.
You know why we're here. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So during an interview with filmmaker Nick Broomfield.
Yeah. He's made 2 documentaries about her.
2 documentaries.
If you want to check them out.
When she thought the cameras were off, she told him that in fact it was self-defense, but she could not stand being on death row where she's been for like years at this point because she just wanted to die because she didn't. We'll get into it. But yeah, so all of the trial was super fast, but then the death row journey. Yeah,
right. Because you can basically just keep appealing until forever. And she was already on death row for 10 years.
Yeah. And I think
and I feel like you're in solitary when you're on death row. Like, you're not just in Gen Pop.
I think.
So it sounds boring. It
sounds very boring. And like also for someone whose mind is probably racing, it's probably very like psychologically like taxing and overwhelming.
Yeah, probably.
Just a fun little tidbit too, that there's a psychopathy checklist, and she scored a 32 out of 40 on it, and it apparently evaluates individuals on a 20-item list of antisocial and interpersonal behaviors, which each, like, so you can get a max score of 40, and I feel like everyone should bring that on first dates.
Yeah, they said
I'm going to do that.
Right?
Sorry.
download the test. And I think the test, like test things for, like, remorse and things like that, which, you know, again, she didn't really show much of.
What if we all take this checklist and then report back on our results next episode?
Please don't make me do it.
I'm like scared.
Please.
Okay, wait, I'll do it.
Because it's like it's like I'm constantly telling my boyfriend I'm not crazy. I'm not a psycho.
We should do it. And we're also, if anybody wants to do it too, DM us your results. And if you get higher than a 27, we might block
you.
We'll block you, but also we just want to make you happy and not hate us. So it'll be we'll either block you or Venmo you. We'll see.
We'll block you.
The threshold for psycho
40.
I would
the max is 40.
30. What's 30 and above.
30 and above.
30 and above. All right. So if you get 30 and above,
sociopath.
We're gonna block you and also alert the FBI.
But also, if you get under 7, live a little. You know what I mean?
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Live on the edge.
So this is the part I'm confused about. So she was still appealing, even though she kind of had made the decision that she wanted to go to the chair immediately. But she did still appeal.
That's
which is crazy to me. This woman was all over the place. She was like self defense, not self defense. Kill it, kill me, don't kill me. Da, 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 da. You guys suck. I suck. You know, it was literally she was so contradictory about everything. Where literally like she was like, there's evil in the world. Everybody has it in them. And then somebody would ask her, are you born evil? And she's like, I don't like you. You know, like this woman I think was just so confused. So I guess
I do feel like she just was conflicted. It just sounds like. I feel like it just underscores that.
Yeah. The appeal happened in 1996 and was denied, of course. And in 2001, a petition to the Florida Supreme Court, she stated that her intention to dismiss her legal counsel and terminate all pending appeals. So that's when she finally was like, I'm done. And she's actually quoted in saying, or she wrote this. She wrote, I killed those men, robbed them as cold as ice, and I'd do it again too. There's no chance in keeping me alive or anything because I'd kill again. I have hate crawling through my system. I am so sick of hearing this she's crazy stuff. I've been evaluated so many times. I'm competent, sane, and I'm trying to tell the truth. I'm the one who seriously hates human life and kill again. So we actually do have a clip of her talking about this, and it's from one of the documentaries we were saying by that guy Nick Broomfield called Life and Death of a Serial Killer, and here it is.
Okay, I cannot go in the execution chamber and die in the execution chamber as a liar. And I cannot go in the execution chamber and be executed under the devil. I have to come clean and cleanse my spirit in the name of Jesus Christ. So I have to come clean and tell the world the lies that went on through my mouth. I mean, now prosecutors and well, cops.
And that you killed the seven men.
Huh?
That you killed those men in cold blood.
Yeah, and I got to come clean that I killed those seven men in first degree murder and robbery. As they said, they had it right. A serial killer. Not so much like thrill kill. I was into the robbing biz. I mean, you know, serial killers are in this thrill-killing jazz. I was into the robbing, just and eliminate a witness. But still, then again, I got a number, so it's serial killer. But I'm coming clean before I go in that execution chamber and be executed that I killed them.
And so like when you met them from the beginning, did you know that you were going to kill them when they picked you up in their cars?
I pretty much had them selected that they were gonna die.
But when you,
yeah, that's crazy. Whew. Yeah. So,
but then later, I think in this documentary, when she thought that she was not mic'd anymore, she told this guy, like, "No, I did it in self defense."
Yeah. Yeah.
So who the fuck knows? No one knows. Eileen knows.
I know.
God knows.
Even though her whole thing was like, "I don't want to be a liar." Yeah.
Well, also, it's a weird thing too. Like, you could even tell in that clip there was a little bit of him trying to find sound bites too. It's like in cold blood, like.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever.
He was leading a bit. Yeah. But
we're not on trial.
We're not.
Someone did a documentary.
But, you know, in true, like I said, with Aileen's whole thing about thinking that everybody failed her, one of the reasons that could have been, we said that she just was tired of being on death row, it's because she actually was accusing, like, people in the prison, like the guards and other people, of poisoning her food, peeing in her food, and basically messing with her in order to make her look crazy. And that's, I think, also why she was, like, screaming, like, I'm sane, like, I know what I'm saying.
Do you think people were really doing that?
Again, like, nobody, we don't know. She really felt like she was so disliked that they were messing with her. And I know that at one point her lawyer was like, she just wants to be treated humanely until she dies, until mm-hmm. we kill her. And again, this is just another thing that really, why she thought society just really let her down. And I think she actually said that she felt railroaded. She's also quoted in saying, society and the cops and the system, a raped woman got executed and was used for books and movies and shit, which we talked about.
But you gave them the rights for that.
She was all over the place.
Yeah.
I know.
That's why it's so hard to, like, feel.
And also, you're doing documentaries of yourself. Like, don't.
Yeah. Yeah. She was giving all these interviews on camera. But that's why it's so hard, because it's like, on one hand, yeah, I do feel so bad for the hand that she was given, but also, like, clearly she
it's like, you did all this stuff,
psychopath.
You're not just gonna get off scot-free. Like, self-defense one time, okay, but seven times?
Yeah,
once, twice, three times a lady, seven times you a serial killer.
yeah
it's like, I don't know what she really expected.
Yeah.
But I still feel, there's still part of me that feels really bad for her life.
Of course.
That is a very true thing. You look at her and it's just very much like a sad case of how we talk a lot about how, like, systems fail people, but also then it's like families fail people.
Her environment failed her.
Her
school
environment
failed people.
Completely,
like, she only was set up for lost causes.
But I will say, I watched this again in the Australian, I think, 60 Minutes little snippet. There are parts of her, even though she goes on to say these things like, I am evil, I will kill again, this is me. She also, in that same interview, will say, I first think about the families of the people I killed, and then I think about Tyra. Mm-hmm. Like, so she's, there's also a part of her, and even Nick, I think, said there's still something very humane. There's still something that, in her that doesn't make you completely go, you're like, she's crazy, but she's
because it's an interesting, because usually with like serial killers, you see them do a smile like, oh, I did that, and they take pride in what they did.
Yeah.
I don't really, from my personal, from looking at her, I don't really see a ton of pride with what she's doing. It's more so she was doing it a means to an end, and it started happening, and then it just kind of like spiraled, and she was a broken woman in a like
That was kind of the read I got too. I felt like she was just doing this for survival and not really for the thrill.
No,
like maybe a little bit of it, because I'm sure she had a lot of like anger towards men who had abused her, mistreated her entire life. But
and she did think that the world was evil and things that were evil.
I mean, where's the lie in that?
There's really not. But then she was executed by lethal injection on October 9th. 2002. And the reason why we played the game up top was because our previous game that we all loved, which was Last Meal and Who Would You Screw? We actually...
What celebrity could you screw for under $20?
Right. Yeah. I feel like she's not getting conjugal visits.
Yeah. So that's why we did the $20 thing, because in this thing it said that she was offered her last meal up to $20, which she actually declined and instead just opted for a cup of coffee.
Black coffee.
Black. Danny.
It was probably Dunkin' Donuts. I respect it. You know, honestly, that would be my last coffee meal. Would be Dunkin'.
It's very good. Dunkin'. Just like a little Dunkachino.
Hey.
Please sponsor us.
Yeah. We would love that.
You don't know
how
that would change my life. Dunkin', if you're listening. Oh, my God.
If we were sponsored by Dunkin'.
Oh, my God.
Come on over.
Yeah. My credit card already is. Like, literally. It's just, yeah.
On Dunkin' Coffees. Eileen and True... Eileen Fashion has a last quote that she said. So and this was Eileen's last quote before she died, because I think they said, do you want to say anything? And she said, I would just like to say I'm sailing with the rock and I'll be back like Independence Day with Jesus. June 6th, like the movie, big mothership and all. I'll be back.
June 6th, Will Smith, don't miss it. Like, what is she talking like, about?
She's the, maybe she might not be the first serial killer, but maybe she was the first sponsored death row. She's like, I have my ad, Dunkin' Coffee, and please see Will Smith in ad.
It's Independence Day.
These things are
hashtag
weird.
Hashtag spawn.
Yeah. hashtag aliens. Yeah. Hashtag RIP Bill Pullman. Bill Pullman didn't die. Yes, he did. No, who died? Bill Pullman or Bill
Who
Paxton?
Died a lot of people? I don't know.
One of the Bills.
I don't know either of those people.
But what's weird...
Okay. Casey hates me.
Sarah is 10. Here's some millennial.
I was born yesterday.
Follow me on AOL chat. Dial up.
Door emoji saying.
Yes. Well, I was doing actually Mike's podcast yesterday. He was making fun of me because I called it music television instead of MTV. He's like, wow. What the fuck did you just say? Anyway, I'm young. I'm hip. I'm with it. Okay.
You drink Baileys at bars?
I drink Carol Ann's. No, but I was going to say, it's so crazy when like this particular one, the fact that she mentioned OJ, the fact that she mentioned Independence Day. She also, they said she said at her funeral, play this Natalie Merchant song, Carnival, because that's the album that she was listening to. It just makes you, because you never hear about the serial killers, their likes and their actual
or the human traits culture of them. Yeah.
Yes. You just hear like, oh, they liked killing gerbils or something like that. But you never hear like, oh, she listened to Natalie Merchant.
Which also, I read
like,
this
she's like a, watched Independence Day. She was a person. Yep. Also, and it's crazy to me to hear little facts like that, you know?
You know, I read this entire thing about how, like, I don't know why you would do this. It seems fake, but, like, apparently that singer gave permission.
I saw that.
To use it at the funeral. Documentary.
Oh, is
at the end of the documentary.
Oh, I thought it was for the funeral, and I was like, can't we just do what we want? Like,
no.
I'm not going to reach out to 2 Chainz for my funeral. I'm sorry. I'm just playing birthday song.
I'm like, Barbara better come to mine. It's a full, the music, the memories, the magic. Yeah.
No, Natalie Merchant was like, you know, you make music and it's for people to enjoy. So I guess I'm not going to deny that this woman at the end of her life wanted my song.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard of her. Oh, she has it.
10,000 Maniacs?
Mm-hmm. These Are Days.
Okay, wow.
These are the days. You might
Wow, would it even be an episode of this podcast if you guys haven't did not break out into song?
Haven't you ever seen an episode of Music Television where she and her band were singing?
Music Television.
Weren't you ever bored rolling the stick down the street, ran into Music Television?
Yeah, back when CD players, have you heard of CDs?
Oh my God. What is that?
Well, actually, could you imagine if Sarah was secretly like the biggest star on TikTok and like none of us knew because like I just don't know how to get to that.
Jesus Christ, TikTok, those are children making full-length motion pictures.
It is kind of
but they're all the same though.
So annoyed and so terrified.
I don't get it.
Full length motion pictures.
TikTok, JoJo Siwa, and Billie Eilish that are taking over the world.
You're so rude.
Moving pictures. Casey sees a train on a movie. She screams and runs out because she thinks it's
like, oh, it's the locomotive.
Yeah. My hat flies off and I jump off with my cane twirling.
She's like an Australian 60 Minutes. Like literally when he said, I was like, was that on at like was paid programming not on for you to watch?
It was on the YouTubes. It was on the YouTubes. I found it on the internet cobwebs.
I admire that. I was literally Googling documentaries I could only find Nick Brooms, and I was like, oh God, his voice
is so annoying.
2 minutes in, I was like, nope, I'm out. And I'll listen to some podcast or something and figure it out.
It's hard going down a rabbit hole first, because then also you just end up seeing pictures of Charlize Theron, and you're just like, oh.
There's a lot of documentaries about her, too.
I know.
There's like a lot of like news programs about her.
But I don't want to watch Dateline.
You know what I want to read, though? There's a book called like Eileen in Her Own Words, or My Letters to Eileen. Her childhood friend, this woman named Dawn, I want to say like Botkin or Botnick or something like that.
We didn't even talk about Dawn and that other guy.
Yeah, there's apparently a childhood friend that was writing to Eileen the whole time. And so then this woman, of course, published these letters.
But
and
those
made a
people
book
were like exploitative, I feel like.
Yeah.
They were like pushing, I feel like they pushed her into this like Jesus thing. And then I think they also benefited from her death. I think they were her benefactors.
Because they wrote a book.
I didn't like those people.
Yeah, the friend was like, she goes, why don't you just stay? I know you want to like die, but don't die in jail, because maybe there's people in jail that haven't know about Jesus yet. And maybe it's your goal to go in there and like share Jesus with them.
I also feel like they kind of gave me the vibe of when someone gets in the public, passes away or something like this happens, and the person's like, oh, we were actually, I took a geometry with them and I actually have something to say if someone wants to give me $200 to go on a TV show.
Exactly.
Yeah. Situation. Yeah.
I didn't like those people, but whatever. It's not about me.
Hither north, thither. I'd still be interested to see what her letters
are. I know. And also if people, if you guys listening are interested in that, maybe down the line we could do a little book club podcast review where we read the book and Sarah's like, I'm not reading. Actually, no, you love to read. You have books.
You read.
No, I read. I like books. I just have to read, like, obviously order them before the episode and not be listening to this, like, the weekend before.
I know. True.
Yeah. Well, we have a sign-off that doesn't really have anything to do with today's episode.
No.
But we liked because it was something that happened.
They're a repeat offender.
2 episodes ago. This the sign-off today comes from K to the Rad, at K to the Rad. Love that name. And it says, NATC pod. Murder is fine, but don't you dare bring up Bailey's.
Betches.